From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And we start today's program with Susana Mendoza, the Comptroller of Illinois. She served in that role since 2016. Before that, she spent 5.5 years as the City Clerk of Chicago and was a decade in the Illinois House of Representatives before that. Last year, she was the highest vote getter of any of the statewide elected officials in the general election here. Her office is responsible for managing state government's day-to-day spending and cash flow. Comptroller Mendoza joins us live in studio on the program this morning. Comptroller Mendoza, it's been a while. Welcome back to the 21st Show.
Oh, it's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
And listeners, if you have questions for the Comptroller of Illinois, you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, I want to begin with the state's rainy day fund. This is basically money that's at the ready for economic downturns or fiscal emergencies. Last year, that fund hit an all-time high, nearly $2 billion. And compare that to where it was half a decade ago, that was just 48 grand. You've often sort of mentioned that this was barely enough to cover state operations for half a minute. Now it'd be a week and a half. So is that where we need to be?
No. So $2 billion, while it is an amazing accomplishment in a short amount of time, and it is a record all-time high, sounds like a lot of money, and certainly when you compare it to the $48,000 that was there during the budget impasse, which is basically non-existent of a rainy day fund, it does sound like a ton of money. However, to put it in perspective, the average nationally is about 40 days worth of reserve. So $2 billion gets us about 10 business days worth of government operations in case of an emergency, and that's a far cry from the 40, which is the average nationally. Do we need 40 days worth of reserves? I would argue that we don't, because what Illinois has that most other states don't have is a significant unfunded pension liability, which is a large challenge for our state. And so I think that having 20 days worth of reserves would be the sweet spot for Illinois. And that would be the goal that we should try to achieve. And I have legislation that would essentially create automatic deposits into not just the state's rainy day fund until we hit an 8% target of savings, but would also put money into paying down our pension obligations. And eventually, when we hit an 8% savings in our rainy day fund, we would be putting a larger amount, instead of going into rainy day, into our pension stabilization. So we need to do both, but the 10 days worth of reserves are $2 billion. It's a great start, but we still want to probably at least double that.
Yeah, I know there are limitations. People like to do, well, think of it like your household budget, right? And you wouldn't be paying off, you wouldn't be piling money into a savings account if you had massive amounts of credit card debt,
Exactly, for example. Perfect way of explaining it.
Yeah, and I do want to come back to pensions and the pension puzzle a little later. But, I mean, let's talk more about this legislation. It hasn't gotten a vote in either chamber. What do you understand to be the objection or the holdup there?
So thankfully, it did get a vote in the House committee, and it passed unanimously out of the House committee, but it did not, as you said, get a vote on the actual full chamber floor. And, you know, I attribute that to, well, let me just start by being on the record and saying that there's no good reason for not passing this legislation in either chamber, and certainly out of both chambers, and getting the governor to sign it. There's just no good reason for that, because this is excellent legislation that would, in fact, codify fiscal discipline into the state's practices forevermore. So what I don't want is to have to rely on a governor to determine that this is a good year that we should be saving money as a practice, because we might have a governor who doesn't think that they want to save money when we have the opportunity to save money. So codifying fiscal discipline into baking it essentially into our law, I think, is super smart. I believe the credit rating agencies would love to see something like that happen in the state of Illinois, which has not had a reputation for saving money when we should. Or paying down our pensions. This is the first time in decades in the history of our pensions, actually, here in Illinois, that the state has put more money towards paying down our pensions than the bare minimum we're supposed to by law. And that's a really good thing, and Governor Pritzker has done a good job with that. Having said that, if someday he's not governor and we have a different governor who doesn't believe in saving money or paying down pensions, then we're right back at square one, and that's what we want to avoid. Now, your question is, why hasn't it passed? Again, no good reason, but one of the reasons I think is because there's no sexiness about saving money or paying down pensions. And there's a lot of excitement around spending money when you're a legislator who gets approached by a constituent who has a great idea for a new program, and it's difficult for legislators to say no. They always want to make their constituents happy. And at the end of the day, there's no ribbon cuttings in saving money or paying down pensions, but there's lots of them when it comes to spending money. And so there's always this dilemma, right? This difficulty, almost like an addiction, unfortunately, from the legislature towards spending money when they have an opportunity to do so. When they see revenues pour into the state better than expected, the first natural reaction from most legislatures, and not just Illinois, but I just think in general, is how can we spend this money? And I would like our state to get into the practice of whenever we see better than expected revenues, the first question not being how can we spend the money, but how much can we save and how much can we put towards paying down our pensions? And so it's a dynamic that the legislature, it's their job to decide how to appropriate funds. And I think they would like to appropriate as many as possible versus saving as much as possible and paying down debts as much as possible.
Well, and as you know, we are already seeing massive crowding out of spending. That's a term that analysts and fiscal observers sometimes use to say we are now putting so much toward pensions that could have been used for higher education and giving people better health benefits, people who are, you know, low income or elderly or disabled, for example. Let's turn to pensions, though, because this is obviously a huge issue still for the state of Illinois. Your legislation, as you mentioned, does also include that pension stabilization fund. There is this minimum amount that the state has to pay every year. What difference does it make to try and go above and beyond that?
It's a huge difference, and I will take it back to the individual household to try to draw an analogy here. If you were to, let's use credit cards as an example. If you have a 21 or 29% APR, right, and you buy a sweater because it's on sale, and it's, you know, it was a $200 sweater and you got it for $100, but you only pay the minimum on your credit card. Over time, that sweater is going to cost you way more than the $200 that you wanted to avoid by buying it on sale at $100, because the interest payments at 29%, they're going to start accruing on everything above the minimum payment that you have to do. You ended up at the end of the day, when you do the math, you bought a sweater and you might as well have bought a scooter and maybe like a used car in the process for what you thought was that $100 sweater that you were buying, just on the interest payments associated to that purchase. And so just like people with, when you talk about paying more towards the pensions instead of just paying the minimum payment, as you started this question with, we can equate it to a mortgage payment. If you have a $2,000 mortgage that you have to pay every month, $2,000, that means that that's what the banks are requesting that you pay at minimum. And over a 30-year period of time, you would satisfy paying your loan and your house. If it's, let's say, $500,000, you're going to be spending like two or three houses worth if you only pay what you're supposed to pay every month, which is the $2,000. Now, if you were to add an additional mortgage payment on top of the one that you do, just even once a year, that extra $2,000 is going to maybe cut 5 to 6 years off of the lifetime of your mortgage if you do that every year. So it is really significant how much money you save on the back end of a huge purchase like that if you were to, when you're able to, add more above and beyond the minimum payment to the principal payment. So just like you would be saving years off of your mortgage and saving, obviously, in a house, hundreds of thousands of dollars in savings by making just one additional payment a year. Imagine when you're talking about billions of dollars of unfunded pension liabilities. We have $140 billion. As an example, this year, over the last year and a half, we added, for the first time ever, $700 million above the minimum required pension payments. And that $700 million investment, if you want to think about it, in paying down our debts faster, is going to cut about $2.4 billion off of the overall pension liability at the end, so on the back end. And so every chance that we get to put more money above and beyond the minimum payments towards our pensions, we are ultimately saving not thousands of dollars or millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars. We're literally saving billions of dollars in long-term debts for taxpayers.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. We're speaking with the Democratic Comptroller of Illinois, Susana Mendoza, 800-222-9455, if you want to join our conversation today, 800-222-9455. All right, I never met a four I didn't like, but let's take this back to the concrete. The pension unfunded liability was under just under $140 billion, billion with a B, at the end of the, I guess that's the 2022 fiscal year. I mean, this has obviously long been a struggle for Illinois, certainly since as long as I've been a reporter, since as long as you've been in state politics. But in an article by Hannah Meisel with Capital News Illinois, she quoted you, or at least paraphrased you, as rejecting the idea that pensions are a crisis for the state. Why do you see it that way?
Because it's a challenge. It's not a crisis. And I think that in large part, the media over years of calling it a crisis, it's just burned into people's brains that this is in fact a crisis. But I think that I'm in a unique position as controller for the state of Illinois, and not controller today, but controller during the budget impasse, during the worst fiscal crisis of our state's history. That was in fact a crisis. And so I think having lived through those 2 years and then being controller, having to navigate our state through the worst fiscal crisis in our history, which wasn't even the pandemic, it was the 2 years of the budget impasse. I have the right to actually say to you, this is a crisis versus a challenge. Why? Because the actual crisis was not being able to pay businesses who had done business with our state because there was no budget. And we had a $17 billion backlog of unpaid bills. Now, you could say $17 billion is certainly a lot less than $140 billion. And how can you say that $17 billion is a crisis and $140 billion is a challenge? But here's why. Because that $17 billion had already been owed to vendors. And it was owed like for 2 years, right? Some people had lost their businesses during that time. Because, I mean, if you can imagine that you do business with the state of Illinois and you willingly provide the services that you're contractually obligated to provide, but the state decides not to pay you for 9.5 months or a year or 2 years, most businesses couldn't survive. And that's what we saw happen during the budget impasse. And I use the term crisis very seriously because there were two instances when I was controller during those first 2 years of that budget crisis where I literally had to talk a man who was a business owner who had double mortgaged his home, who was on the verge of losing his business of 28 years, out of killing himself. That, to me, is a crisis. Why? Because these people were owed money for many, many months, sometimes years. They hadn't been paid, and they were about to lose everything, and many of them lost hope. And many of them did lose their businesses, and thankfully this individual did not take his life, but that's what it was like to be controller during that budget crisis. Now, I would say that the pension challenge is a crisis if every single state employee decided to retire tomorrow, because then I would have to come up with $140 billion, which we don't have. But that's not the case. Right now, there's not a single state employee who's retired who has not gotten their pension check on time. And I would equate this in some way to like your mortgage. Let's say you want to buy a house and you decide to buy a $500,000 home, assuming you can afford to make the monthly payments. This is not something that's going to keep you up at night. But if the bank all of a sudden called you and said that instead of paying your mortgage every month over 30 years, you all of a sudden had to pay the whole $500,000 tomorrow, then that would be a mortgage crisis for you, right? You would freak out justifiably, just like I would freak out if every state employee decided to retire tomorrow, which we know is an impossibility. That's going to happen over a period of decades. And that pension obligation has to be paid down, or made full, I should say, over several decades. And so we have time now. Thankfully, because I have straightened out the state's financial dysfunction, we finally have a stability and predictability in our finances. I no longer have a backlog of unpaid bills to the tune of almost $17 billion. We no longer take an average of 210 business days to pay our vendors, which is 9.5 months in real people time. My oldest bill today is only 13 days old. We pay faster than the private sector. And instead of getting the 8 consecutive credit downgrades in just the 2 years before I took office, I've now helped shepherd our state through 8 consecutive credit upgrades during a recovery of the budget impasse and a global pandemic. That gives me the confidence to tell you that we can finally now breathe and take a look at how we address the pension obligations and how we get fully funded in that respect. And so it will take time, but it's not an obligation that's going to come due tomorrow. It's an obligation that we have to manage, and it is a challenge, but that is completely overcomable. So I am, I think, uniquely situated to describe the difference between an actual crisis and an actual challenge. And I look forward to be able to do what I can in my part to try to address overcoming that challenge.
We need to take a break on our program. We're talking with Susana Mendoza, the Comptroller of Illinois. 800-222-9455 if you have a question about the state's finances or her term in office in any other way. Again, 800-222-9455. More with the Comptroller of Illinois when we return. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking with Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza. She is a Democrat. She's been in that role since late 2016. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. We've got about 10 minutes left in our time together. 800-222-9455. So before the break, you mentioned Illinois' credit ratings. They have been improving over the past few years. There have been upgrades from a couple of upgrades from major rating agencies just this year. I do want to come back. I had mentioned Hannah Meisel's interview earlier. You said the agencies have not forgotten Illinois' recent poor financial behavior. What do you think it's going to take to shake that reputation?
Well, I think the actions that the legislature and the governor have taken over the last 4 years, which have been to introduce and pass balanced budgets, they've done a really good job of that. They've also been fiscally disciplined, and that's something that I preach about all the time. And so, but you know, we've seen a state that for decades upon decades had shown poor fiscal management and very little to no existent fiscal discipline. And so that is the image that Illinois had created. It's the image that many people still have of our state, even though this legislature and this governor, this administration, and obviously clearly my office, which this is what I preach every single day, we've been incredibly fiscally disciplined and responsible with the finances, because all of this work was critically important to providing the business community and our resident community a state that has stability and predictability. Because without financial stability and predictability, people will look elsewhere to plant their roots, to, you know, raise their families, and businesses will look elsewhere to invest their dollars. And so I've been working so hard to fix our state's finances and to help people in Illinois so that we can have a state that is poised for growth in the future, right? All of the stabilization of the finances that I've worked to achieve has been to prepare Illinois for tremendous financial, economic growth that then creates a state environment where people will choose to come to Illinois to plant their roots, to grow their families, hopefully grow businesses and grow their wealth. We have an incredibly awesome state, perfectly situated right in the middle of this country, that has the best intermodal transport of any state. We're the only state in the nation that has every single rail that goes through Illinois. We have incredible waterways that, frankly, I think have been underutilized that have tremendous potential. We've got projects happening across the state right now. You look at the port project happening in Cairo, the expansions happening in DuQuoin or in that area of the state. You see the potential for making southern and central Illinois an absolute boon for manufacturing that will give us a competitive advantage among other states. And you also see that our institutions of higher learning, like here, the University of Illinois, right? I mean, they're tremendous assets to our state that we need to invest even more in so that we grow and keep a skilled workforce in this incredible state. But none of those things are attractive to people if we don't have a stable and predictable financial foundation. And we now have that. And so the challenge is, of course, you know, continuing to pay more into our pensions when we have an opportunity to do so. Very important to say that I have never, ever skipped a pension payment, nor will I. And in fact, I've had the practice over the last couple of years of even prepaying pensions when we have a better month than expected so that we can keep those dollars operating for the pension systems and not having them having to draw down their assets. So there's so many good things happening. But again, this is all to get Illinois ready for its growth spurt, and we're ready.
So in your view, things are actually better for the state fiscally, like the fundamentals are getting better. It doesn't just look better because of all the pandemic money that came from the federal government and that sort of thing.
No, and thank you for asking that. That pandemic money was critically important to helping Illinois deal with what? The pandemic. And so for all the folks who think that I used, for example, the federal relief dollars to help pay down the debts, let's just follow this logic here. If that were the case, then I would still have a bill backlog of, in this case, we had about at least $8 to $9 billion worth of COVID-related expenses. So if I use the COVID money to pay down the $17 billion in debt, we'd still have a gigantic backlog. Today, we have no more backlog. In fact, I paid down our backlog through smart strategic financial management and discipline 2 years ago, before we even got a penny of the federal stimulus in the door. So I'm incredibly thankful to our senator, Senator Durbin, Senator Duckworth, and for America, frankly, for stepping up for Illinois and all the other 49 states during the pandemic. That is the responsibility of the federal government to do. But I'm also very proud that for every single dollar of federal funds that came in, I'm able to account for it. We show it on our website. We're incredibly transparent. And in fact, your listeners probably don't know this, but Illinois, the controller's website was actually recognized as the best website in the country for financial transparency related to COVID expenditures. Like, it's real simple for me. I believe that people deserve to know how their hard-earned tax dollars are being spent. And that's why transparency has really been the hallmark of my administration. I want them to know that here's how we use the federal dollars and you can track them. And here's how we used the general revenue funds for our budget and for our bills. And you can track those. And I honestly think, Brian, that's probably one of the reasons why I was the top vote getter in the state of Illinois. Because whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, you know, finances should not be a partisan thing. Everyone should want somebody who's going to be fiscally disciplined, fiscally responsible, and speak the truth as to how people's hard-earned dollars are being utilized.
We got a question from a listener who wants to know if healthcare bills to providers, doctors, nurses, dentists, that sort of thing, are being paid on the same schedule that you're discussing in terms of paying the vendors.
As a matter of fact, healthcare bills to those providers are the very first bills that I pay out. They have a zero payment delay. So the day I get them, we process them immediately and they're out the door the very next day. So I've from day one, even during the budget impasse, made it a priority to take care of our most vulnerable first. So anybody in the healthcare space, anyone dealing with children or adults with disabilities, nursing homes, hospice care, even like in areas like domestic violence shelters, right? So it might not necessarily be seen as healthcare, but these are vulnerable groups that deserve to get paid on a very timely way because they're holding on by a string. So yes, the healthcare space is first and foremost. And I'd also piggyback on that besides it being the morally correct thing to do to take care of our vulnerable populations, certainly healthcare is one of those, it's also the fiscally smart approach because for every time I pay a Medicare bill, as an example, the federal government will give me a 50-cent match on one state dollar. So Medicare, of course, Medicaid bills are for the people who are the most vulnerable in the state. Mm-hmm. And if I pay $1 in Medicaid, means I'm helping a vulnerable individual, the federal government will give me an extra 50 cents. So I've been able to, in the past, as an example, prior controllers put Medicaid bills at the end because they were so huge that it seemed overwhelming to tackle them. I have done the opposite. I've brought Medicaid bills to the front. because why leave billions of dollars of federal money on the table? That's just negligent as a financial officer. So I'm doing the morally correct thing of prioritizing vulnerable groups, and I'm also doing the fiscally sound approach for taxpayers of stretching $1 into $1.50. So think of it like a coupon, and think of me as your coupon controller.
I know our time is short. I do want to ask you, we've mentioned a couple of times now, you got more votes than any other statewide candidate last year. You're the highest ranking Latina in state government. Beyond that, Latinos are the largest minority group in the state and growing. What are you doing to build power for that constituency?
Well, I think number one is, being there, right? You can't be what you don't see. And I think that I have taken a lot of pride in having been the first independently elected Hispanic person. And I hope that I'm setting an example that makes my heritage community proud, right? That other little Latina girls can see themselves reflected in the job that I'm doing and know that they too can step up and lead for their communities. But I think, being here and understanding those trials and tribulations that communities like the one that I grew up in have gives me a better understanding of how to take care of all populations and specifically vulnerable ones as a priority, right? I didn't come from money. I still, I get by, right? I have taxpayers pay me a healthy salary to do this job. But I, if I didn't work here, I could be making lots more money out in the private sector. But I love what I do. And, I'm not wealthy, which means I'm an honest politician, right? Because I don't have boatloads of money that I can invest and do things with. But that gives me an understanding of what normal people come through, right? I grew up in a family that didn't have a lot of money, that struggled to make ends meet, that had to figure out how to stretch the value of a dollar. So I have a keen understanding of what that feels like to struggle, to not come from a politically connected family, and to somehow break into this field and then try to make a difference for people like what my family was like growing up, right? So whether you're Hispanic or you're African American or you're in rural Illinois, we all go through so many similar problems. Maybe we look different or we talk differently, but we're still the same at heart. And so I try to be controller for all those people and try to connect with those folks as much as humanly possible. So when I'm traveling to Central or Southern Illinois, I mean, I don't know that I've ever asked somebody, are you a Democrat or a Republican? Maybe they ask me and I'll tell them and they might be surprised, right? But I always say, I'm an Illinoisan and I get to represent you regardless of the party that you're in. And I think that connects with people because they know I'm fighting for them. And most importantly, that they can trust me. And I think that's what those votes represented on Election Day. It's not a popularity contest. It's just that on Election Day, more people chose to give me their trust with their vote than to other people. And that's something that I take very close to heart and I carry a lot of pride with me and I'm not going to let them down.
Susana Mendoza is the Comptroller of Illinois. Comptroller Mendoza, thank you for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me so much, and great talking to you, Brian.